Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Trifecta Podcast. I am your host, Jack.
Oh, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean, Destroyer of Worlds.
So a little bit of info about this podcast. Trifecta is a weekly podcast where two guests and myself will discuss three things that have something in common. Some weeks we'll try three restaurants that have something similar to them. Other weeks we'll listen to three different albums by the same artist. This week, we watched three movies that have something in common. They're all a part of the Star Wars prequel trilogy. So, I chose the prequel specifically for this podcast because I feel like with the original trilogy, it's very easy to rank them in terms of best to worst, and I feel like most lists that I've seen online always list Empire as the best, New Hope as the middle one, and then Return of the Jedi is the least quality of the original trilogy, and episodes 7, 8, and 9 aren't complete yet, so it's kind of hard to rank those. The prequels are up for a little bit of grabs. I feel like whenever I go onto a list and see their ranking, it's always wildly different. No two people feel like they're exactly the same in terms of quality. I mean, none of them are particularly good, I would say. But that's kind of the fun of talking about these movies. And in this podcast, I will be ranking a lot of not so great things because I feel like it's more fun to try to find the best of the not so great.
Nothing better than being forced to sit down and rewatch some less than stellar movies for the sake of the art.
Definitely. And just like a heads up for a future episode idea I have, since we can get wildly crazy and try a bunch of different combinations with this podcast, at some point I want to do three threequels that were released in the year 2007. Oh. So it's probably going to be like Shrek the Third.
Spider-Man 3,
yes. Oh, yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, or Rush Hour 3, because also released in 2007.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Thank you for respecting me as a human being and saying yes. Rush Hour 3.
Wow.
I know. It's like, I'm almost thinking that's going to be the third one just because I'd rather watch that one.
Over Pirates of the Caribbean 3.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of things I'd rather watch over Pirates of the Caribbean.
Paint drying.
True that. True that indeed.
Grass growing.
So,
chia pet.
Yes, just like sit and watch a chia pet grow and never take your eyes off of it.
While At World's End is playing on the TV in the background.
Oh gosh.
You have to choose between the two. It's like the blue pill and the red pill.
Yes. That would be good. Ooh, the Matrix trilogy, that could be another one.
That'd be a good one.
I've actually never seen any of the Matrix movies.
I've only seen the first one.
Like not even a lick.
That would be a fun one. That would be a fun rabbit hole to go down sometime. Yes.
It's a trip.
It quite is a trip. So I guess let's talk about our past experiences with the prequels. We're all relatively around the same age, so we were fairly young when they came out. It was my first exposure to the Star Wars series. The Phantom Menace came out when I was 4 years old. And it was the first Star Wars that I saw in a theater, the first Star Wars I watched and liked, and it's kind of what got me into Star Wars. So I have a very interesting relationship with it. And I liked them as a kid. It's not until I got older and looked back that I realized how much of a mess they were.
They're very not good.
Yeah. So,
I'm actually surprised. That's like almost my exact experience with them.
Nice.
The first one was the first, Phantom Menace was the first Star Wars movie I ever saw, including the original. That was and I thought it was great. I wanted to watch it at my babysitter's house every single day. I would want to watch The Phantom Menace. I just loved it. And then I became an 18-year-old person, and then I realized that people actually don't like The Phantom Menace very much. I thought for the longest time there like wasn't anything wrong with The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
Up until like probably like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
My experience with it is pretty different because, like you said, I was probably around 4 when The Phantom Menace came out, so I don't really remember anything about it. I never went and saw it in theaters, but I do remember my dad having VHS copies of the original trilogy and watching those every now and then. But, you know, I was a 3-4-year-old kid. I never really took in anything that was actually going on the screen, and I didn't have any memories of actually watching them until I was a lot older. And I remember everyone being excited for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing I remember. Like, everyone's freaking out. It's a new Star Wars movie. It's going to be great. It's blah, blah, blah. It's this, it's that. And I was just like, oh, it's a movie. I'm just going to go over here and do my, you know, 4-year-old stuff that I do.
Do you guys remember what the reaction was after it came out, though? I was a little bit too young.
I was too young.
Yeah, yeah, I don't remember it.
Like,
I just remember later as a teenager going online and, like, seeing that people hated it. I was like, oh, people hate it. Okay.
Yeah, because I think it had been out for a while when I saw it. I saw it in, like, the dollar movie theater with my dad, and it was while we were waiting for Inspector Gadget to start. We just sat in there and watched it for a little bit, and then we both liked it so much that then we eventually, like, came back and watched the full thing.
Yeah.
And paid that time.
Oh, no. Paid the full dollar.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose it is rather perplexing, though, to see, like, how it seems like for a lot of people, the first movie was the one that, like, they saw first. Like, I don't think we're the only ones who saw The Phantom Menace as, like, the first Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there must be, like, something to be said for, like, this way that movie was able to, like, get kids interested in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow, mm-hmm. despite the fact that it's, like, a pretty boring movie.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't a whole lot of action going on besides, like, the last 20 minutes.
AKA the best part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really only 2, like, really big action sequences out of the whole thing. I mean, there's, like, small little kerfuffles within the movie, but like, 2 really big action set
pieces. Nothing that screams out, this has action moments in it, you know, or things that we would see later on down the line, even with episodes 2 and 3 and so on.
You could probably say the last 20 minutes of 1 kind of saves it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Because if those last 20 minutes in the Darth Maul fight aren't there, like, that movie is, like, a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, I don't even know how anyone would be able to slog through that movie had it not been for the epicness of Darth Maul as a villain.
Darth Maul.
But what about 2, though? 2's kind of like a different story, because I don't feel like people have that same connection with 2 that people have with 1.
The interesting thing for me is that by the time episode 2 came out, I was 7, close to 8, and I think I saw it in theaters about 3 or 4 times because I liked it that much. And I really got into the story for that one. Although, without revealing my ultimate ranking, I do not feel similarly about it as an adult whatsoever. But for some reason, 7-year-old Jack was totally on board with it.
I mean, frankly, like, I feel like 2 is kind of the opposite of 1 in the way of, like, I feel like for any kid that watched 1,
mm-hmm.
that made them excited for 2 must have been such like a letdown, because, like, in a lot of ways it's like this, it's really similar to Phantom Menace, but without a lot of the parts of Phantom Menace that kind of save it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of replaced with is kind of these, like, sort of anticlimactic lightsaber fights.
Yeah, and there's just, like, that romance subplot that, like, nobody wanted or cared about. And it's just not a fun time either.
Well, it's like, I'm sure there are some people who are feeling invested in the whole romantic angle of the movie, but like the idea of like people who like Star Wars being like really into a love story, like, doesn't really like seem to connect in my mind. Like, I can't imagine like there was a whole lot of fan servicing going down in Attack of the Clones, right?
No.
I'm watching Attack of the Clones because that scene where Padme tells Anakin that she's pregnant just really gets me going.
The thing, too, is that I feel like it's so obvious that George Lucas, as a man, wrote this trilogy without any intervention. Because interesting enough, I'm pretty sure I have fact checked this before, he financed all of these movies himself, so there was like no studio intervention at this point. He was George Lucas, so like nobody could tell him, hey, this is a dumb idea.
And so
like,
it was 100% George Lucas.
It was 100% George Lucas. And there is no way that Padme would have fallen for Anakin when Obi-Wan was there the whole time. Like, just, I find it really hard to buy into Padme falling for Anakin, who was like a kid that she practically babysat in the first movie,
yeah,
when like Obi-Wan is there.
Yeah.
I just find that really hard to buy into. And especially when like, by the time that Attack of the Clones is coming around, Anakin's like somewhat devious, mm-hmm, and says some really problematic things, and like Padme's not for it, but then he's like so persistent that she eventually gives in to him, and I'm like, that's not a good message to send.
Mm-hmm. It is sort of romance by way of like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
And that's like such not a good romance to build this concept of like Luke Skywalker's parents off of, you know, especially when like the original trilogy gave us Han Solo and Leia, and like their romance just seems a lot more natural.
Romance
and
done right.
Yeah, definitely.
I will say though, in defense of Attack of the Clones, I do think the like most like real emotion Hayden Christensen ever shows in a film is in Attack of the Clones. When he goes back to the sand planet and like kills all those sand people, and
yeah,
like not afterwards, but like when he's actually in the act of, yeah, like finding his mom and stuff, I actually do feel like he does a decent job of acting in that moment.
The, yeah, one thing I always give Hayden Christensen props for in the Star Wars prequels is when he's acting but not with words. When, yes, he's showing emotion, he does a really good job of it.
What I've heard is that if you watch the Star Wars movies on mute, which you probably don't want to like have that as your first exposure then, because you won't really know what's going on, but if you watch them on mute and you just visually look at the performances, that Hayden Christensen actually gives a really good performance as Anakin physically.
Yes.
It's just that the dialogue is so poorly so written
bad
that he can't perform it well, and that the only people in those movies whose performances don't come off as wooden, like Ewan McGregor, Ian McDiarmid, who played Palpatine,
mm-hmm,
like all those people, it's because they're Shakespearean actors,
yeah,
because they've been trained in Shakespeare, and much like Shakespeare's dialogue, George Lucas's dialogue is not logical. It,
yeah,
does not make sense.
Yeah.
I've also noticed that George Lucas, especially in the prequels, just has this really big problem where he like has to have characters like saying their emotions.
Yes.
Literally. Like they can't just like think something. Like they have to say like, I am angry.
Mm-hmm.
You underestimate my power, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like he's afraid that we won't be able to, like, follow what the characters are thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a really good, like, the perfect scene that shows this is the scene where Padme tells Anakin that she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
because visually you can see, oh, at first when she tells him, Anakin's like terrified. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, wait, this is actually kind of a happy thing because, like, you know, we're going to be a family and blah, 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 blah. But then the dialogue just kills it. He's like, it's a joyous occasion, but this is also very scary and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, God, just, this is not a moment that needs words.
Yeah, like, show, don't tell.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, which is like one of the really basic screenwriting.
Yeah, it's very basic in terms of just writing anything.
Yeah, very true. And something that I think is kind of interesting too is that episode one feels like a movie that was made in the 90s. It is such a 90s blockbuster.
Mm-hmm,
true. And episodes two and three are so tonally different from episode one. Like, they do not feel cohesive, except for the fact that, like, they have a lot of the same people in them and that they're, like, part of this one expanding story. But I don't know, it's just crazy how much of a tonal shift there is from the first very kid-friendly, very 90s movie, and yeah, then the two other ones just feel like very post millennium.
I mean, you could probably find a lot of similarities between episode one and episode seven. Just in the fact that they seem more based in the idea of, like, trying to get people, like, acclimated back to the Star Wars universe as opposed to, like, actually making a compelling story. Like, they seem more interested in just kind of, like, having you remember all these things and, like,
hey, remember Star Wars?
Yeah, and, like, mm-hmm, selling merchandise.
Yes.
Yeah, but I feel like episode 7 is so similar to episode 4, though. Like, it hits all of the same story beats. It yeah, has all of the same plot points, except for they've just kind of switched around the characters a little bit. Like, mm-hmm, Rey is now Luke. Han Solo is now Obi-Wan. Like, they fill all of the same yeah, archetypes. But I think that The Last Jedi kind of veered off of the direction you thought it was going to go in very well. And yeah, but you know, we'll save that for
another time.
Another time when episode 9 comes out.
And episode 1 doesn't really follow any of that path either. It kind of just does something.
That and the biggest part, episode 7 was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Compared to episode 1.
Which is like a small child defeats an army.
Accidentally.
And, like, just knows how to fly, like military grade.
Yeah.
Fighter jets. Like, oh yeah.
And hey, by also, the way, this kid's a prodigy and he can blow up your entire army.
Also, there's a child-sized helmet in the cockpit.
That's a very good point. I've never thought about that before. Star Wars logic.
Well, we haven't talked about 3 yet, I suppose, in terms of, like, our past experience with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think the pregnancy thing was just the one, like, part of episode 3 that we've kind of veered off into.
My experience with 3 is actually quite positive, because that was the movie that came out while I was, like, most invested in Star Wars. It was kind of the movie that that was the Star Wars movie I went to see in theaters, and it was like, whoa, you know. I will say, of the 3, I feel like that was really the movie that George Lucas wanted to make the whole time. I get the sense he was just kind of, like, making the first two as, like, a predecessor to doing what he really wanted, which was making the last one.
Yeah, it's like if he had a show on Fox and it was 24 episodes for the whole season, but he really only needed, like, 12, so there's just a lot of filler episodes. Yeah, that's what episodes 1 and 2 feel like. Yeah.
So much dialogue, so much talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have really fond memories of episode 3, because it's, like, the first one that I remember, like, being out that I, like, consciously knew, like, oh, hey, a new Star Wars movie is coming out. That's a that's a big deal. You know, it's the last one of this new trilogy. And I've never... There's only one Star Wars movie I've ever seen in theaters, and that was this last one. So I never, like, went and saw it in theaters or have, like, fond memories of it like that. But I do remember watching it and being like, hey, I like this. You know, just because I never really, like, got into Star Wars until I was a lot older. Actually, and, like, going into, like, all the stories and themes and stuff like that within each movie.
Yeah.
So, like, I just took it for what it was. So I never really thought about it, like, that critically until I was, you know, a few years older. But yeah, like, so it's hard for me to, like, talk about, like, my early experiences with the movies because, like, I was never, like, that kid who was, like, super into Star Wars. Like, I was always into other stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I remember it coming on TV, and they have this, like, a marathon where they were just, like, playing it for 24 hours on TV one day. Mm-hmm. I sat down and watched it, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. The robot guy is kind of weird, but...
Oh, yeah.
But it's pretty good. I like episode 3.
It's nice to, like... I'm actually glad, too, that you didn't have a lot of experience with it growing up, because it's nice to have different backgrounds with it, mm-hmm. and then to just kind of, like, come together and see how people experience things differently. For me, I was not a fan of episode 3. I saw it, like, opening weekend in theaters. I was so excited, and I felt very let down.
Even like, in the theater, like, when you saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember finding the last 40-ish minutes of it very exciting, but I was very bored with most of it up until the last 40 or so minutes, and I'm pretty sure I was very disturbed by parts of it, because I did not rewatch it until I was 21, and, I liked it a lot more as mm-hmm. I got older, but there were a lot of parts where it's like, oh yeah, I definitely repressed Anakin's legs getting cut off. I definitely repressed the younglings dying. Like, I did not want to think about that.
You didn't
want to
remember.
No, I did not want to remember that stuff.
Let's just remind ourselves that of the prequels, the third one is the only one that managed to get a PG-13 rating.
Yes, yeah. That is true. Where... Episode 7 and 8 both have PG-13 ratings, and so does Rogue One.
And frankly, I would be okay with an R-rated Star Wars movie. I mean, maybe it would kind of end up being a little bit out of place, because...
Star Wars rebellious phase.
Yeah, but I don't see anything wrong with Star Wars getting a little bit more nitty-gritty.
No, and I think the main reason why... a PG-13 rating for those movies has become more recent is because the first three came out in a time where there was not a PG-13 rating.
Yeah, we're...
So, by default, they just went to PG because they obviously weren't R-rated.
Yeah.
And,
PG,
you know...
PG was also a lot more of a broad thing back then. Like, like basically, if it's not a definitive R-rated movie or a kid's movie, it was PG.
Yeah.
It was very different back then than what we consider PG nowadays.
It was. And I think a lot of people criticized how childish The Phantom Menace was, which obviously had a PG rating because there was no need for it to not be. And I think Attack of the Clones kind of teetered on PG-13 territory, so it makes sense that by the end of that trilogy...
How long has PG-13 been a thing?
I think...
I only really remember it the past, like...
It was, like, the mid-80s, because Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was the movie that made PG-13 ratings a thing. Yeah, because of a few scenes that, like, would have given it an R rating, but...
But not quite.
Yeah.
Yeah, and...
But it didn't say the F word more than once.
Yeah.
That's your thing. That was the thing back in the day. You can say the F word once, and...
Mm-hmm.
You're good.
Mm.
Spaceballs was PG.
Yeah. All right. So, we've been talking about the prequels. Now, let's rank them.
Okay.
So, we're going to start with going around the circle, saying our least favorite, then, you know, whatever falls in the middle, and then our favorite, and giving an argument to why we think so.
Okay.
For me, Attack of the Clones. I don't think I will ever move away from that stance. Attack of the Clones is the worst Star Wars movie. Not just of the prequels, of the entire trilogy. It's just terrible.
So that's your least favorite?
Least favorite.
Mm-hmm. And then what would be your middle one?
Phantom Menace. Yeah.
All right.
I think so. And to be quite frank, I had a harder time deciding which was my favorite than which was my least favorite.
Yeah.
I perceive the rewatchability of 3 and 1 to be pretty similar, actually. Whereas 2 is, like, maybe not as controversial as the others are, but it's certainly not rewatchable. If you're watching the three of movies of the trilogy, I guarantee you Attack of the Clones will be when you fall asleep.
Yeah.
So then, of course, Revenge of the Sith is what I would say is the best of the prequels.
It's fair.
I'm the exact same way. So my order goes Attack of the Clones, Phantom Menace, then at the top, Revenge of the Sith. But mine was actually kind of the opposite. Mine was very easy to pick which one was my favorite, and then between the other two, which one I put at the bottom was actually pretty hard for me. In the end, I went with Attack of the Clones just because, to me, the Attack of the Clones is just so boring. I can't get over how much this dialogue and just... I wish I was asleep, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the ending with, like, Yoda and Dooku kind of having their little fight, that was all right.
Hell yeah.
I think the biggest sin that all of the prequels has ever made is how little Christopher Lee is in those movies. I mean, considering that in Revenge of the Sith, he's in there for the first 5 minutes and he gets his head chopped off.
Yeah, but, what the fuck was that about?
I honestly think they just couldn't afford to have him in the movie any more than they have.
To be honest, I don't really care for Count Dooku as a character.
I don't either, but I just like that Christopher Lee was in there. Yeah, I just really like Christopher Lee.
He played the character very well, even though there wasn't really much for him to work with. He did the best that he could with what he was given.
Yeah.
But Count Dooku, just as a character, it's
he's
like,
not even scary.
Why is he there? He's just an old man.
He was like a former Jedi, so he like came, so that kind of like takes away from some menace from him.
Yeah.
And then when you add that onto the fact that he's old, then that kind of makes him less scary. And then when you like see him fight with the lightsaber, you're like, does he even know what he's doing? Like that?
He's
like
just flailing it around.
Yeah.
Actually, Palpatine's kind of the same, but worse. Like,
at least Palpatine's funny. At least Palpatine has some great lines.
Yeah,
some
we
great
can
moments.
We can do thank it. Palpatine for so many prequel memes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
But I think the thing that like pushes Phantom Menace up to number two for me is the last 20 minutes. That last fight between Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Darth Maul just is really cool. Even going back and watching it recently, I was just like, this is awesome. This makes up for the entire movie.
Do any of us remember the song, the name of the song that John Williams has at the end of the movie during that big sequence?
I know the song. I don't know the name of it.
I think of it in my head, too, like the
yeah, whenever like, that song...
So lit.
Yeah, it's like one of the best moments of like composition I feel like I've ever heard in any movie.
Yeah, it just gets you so hype.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that's also kind of why that those last 20 minutes are so great, because that song
that song makes it, man.
It just keeps going, but you don't mind. It's a really long song.
It is.
Yeah. And it goes throughout like pretty much the whole sequence. But you don't mind.
Every time that comes in, you're like, yeah.
And even though that lightsaber sequence probably is a little bit too dancey for my taste, like it feels a bit choreographed at times.
Doesn't but feel like it's an actual fight.
It's some fast paced action.
It's though. Really cool. Yeah. And the thing that really puts Revenge of the Sith at the top for me is the fond memories that I have of it as a kid. It's really what got me into really watching Star Wars.
I feel like, and in general, I do feel like it's maybe the most exciting one. Like, the ending fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin is really cool. Mm-hmm. And it gave birth to the no meme, which is always a plus in my book.
Oh, yeah.
And again, like, Hayden Christensen's, like, facial acting, his physical acting mm-hmm. is really great, especially, like, where he goes and kills the younglings and stuff like that. Like, some of the faces he makes, you're like, okay, that's actually a little scary. And mm-hmm. and in general, between all three movies, Ewan McGregor is just great.
Oh, yeah.
I love Ewan McGregor. I wish that they would have gone with, like, the original plans for, like, General Grievous, to where he's, like, this super strong badass that mm-hmm. could kill anyone. But no, they gave him the cough, and then he's super weak, and then he's in one fight scene, and then nope, gone, see ya. Mm. Four lightsabers at once? Nah, who cares about that?
See, that's the problem with him, though. Like, even though he has four lightsabers, you're like, Obi-Wan will beat him.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, he's so weak, and Obi-Wan's gonna beat him. But, like I said, it's my most fondly remembered one, and even going back and watching him, I was just like, yeah, I still think three would be at the top of my list.
Interesting. All right.
I sense there's a difference of opinion.
I bet.
Get ready for some discourse here.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so I agree with the both of you on Attack of the Clones being my least favorite, for sure. Very much for similar reasons.
Yeah.
The middle one for me is Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
Okay,
here we go.
I do think that Revenge of the Sith has some of the strongest moments of the prequels, and I think that it gets the best performances out of some of the actors in it. Not all, because, you know, like, a lot of them aren't given much in that movie. Padme's not given much. Samuel L. Jackson isn't given much. But it does have some very strong points, and I think that out of all of the prequels, that one fits in the original trilogy canon mm-hmm. the most well.
Oh, one thing I did want to add, my bad.
Yeah, no problem.
Is I really, really, really like the opera house scene.
Yes,
between that Anakin one's really cool. and the Emperor, where he just where he explains or tells him the story of, like, Darth Plagueis mm-hmm. and how
the lies, and using the Force, he could create life.
And I don't know. I really like that story, because I like that scene because it kind of adds on to, like, the world of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like, it gave it, like, its own mythos. You know what I mean? Like, I just, for some reason, that scene, like, really, really stuck with me. I was like, that was really cool. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now you have to defend the opinion of having the Phantom Menace as
number one,
as the greatest of the prequels.
Well, here's the thing, too.
How do you plead?
Adding a little bit more to Revenge of the Sith, I feel like this overall, okay, so I think that with Revenge of the Sith, its overall goal is to sell Anakin's transformation to the dark side and to sell this trilogy as a whole. And I think it doesn't necessarily fail at that, but it doesn't necessarily completely succeed either. I still feel somewhat like there's something missing with Revenge of the Sith. So leading into why I think Phantom Menace isn't necessarily the best, but it is my personal favorite, because its goal was to introduce Star Wars to a new generation and to get a bunch of people interested in Star Wars again. And it did exactly that. It succeeded in that mission. People who were longtime fans of Star Wars did not like it, but to a whole new generation, it opened up this entire world for them to become fans of. And Phantom Menace, I feel like, is just the most entertaining of the three because it's like the room of the Star Wars movies. It does not make any sense. Everything about it is just so, like, what the fuck, that it's so entertaining to watch. I'm just constantly entertained by this movie. I could watch it over and over again because of how bad it is. It's so bad that it's great.
Oh, that's hard to...
See, my problem with it, though, is, like, can we really say, like, the worst cinematography of all the prequels is, like, the best movie? Like, that just doesn't sit right with me. Like, it... When you see, like, George Lucas's reactions to the movie and the special features of the first movie, even he looks like he realizes how bad of a movie he's made. Like, he looks genuinely worried after he sees the movie. He's like, so, we can't really change anything, can we? We're too far along. Oh.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it looks like we wrote ourselves into a corner here. And that tells me that that wasn't necessarily his mission. Even if that is what he ended up doing by accident, I don't get the sense he was genuinely trying to, like, introduce people to the Star Wars universe. I felt like he was trying to, like, maybe introduce us to some new characters. But,
well, he has said, though, before that he created the Star Wars prequel trilogy because he had children since the Star Wars movies came out, and he wanted to create movies that they could grow up with and that they could watch. So he did kind of create it for
a new generation.
Damn. So it completely succeeded in his mission. But is it a good movie? Not necessarily. Is it so bad that it's good? Absolutely.
But I would make the argument that Revenge of the Sith is, like, a better movie when you're looking at it from the angle of actually trying.
Yes. I will agree with that. But it's just a matter of opinion, though.
Yeah.
See, I don't agree. I feel like when you're making a film, you need to actually be trying to make a good film for it to be good. Like, the Room is kind of like a special case in the fact that he, like, accidentally made something that was pleasurable to watch. And I would say Phantom Menace can kind of fall into that category too. But can we really say it's a good movie even when it's not?
No, but I'm not necessarily saying it's a good movie. I'm just saying I think it works the best out of the three because it had the biggest mission to reintroduce this franchise. And
when you think about it, it did.
Yeah. And even though it was a critical disappointment, it was a commercial success. And it got everybody talking about Star Wars again, and it made a new batch of kids fall in love with it who did not realize the...
On top of all the other media that it has made. Soundtracks, video games, side movies.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that.
It still doesn't sit right with me, though.
It feels dirty saying Phantom Menace is number one.
No, because I feel like saying that would be the equivalent of giving The Room an Oscar. You know what I mean? It's kind of subscribing to that model because, like, if you were to look at it just based on, like, how the public views it, The Room could be a movie that, like, is seen as, like, Oscar worthy, not because it's, like, made with the best intentions, but just from the idea that it was something that people like to watch.
Yeah.
Like, can we really say that a movie is the best of these three when it's probably the one where they tried the least?
I don't think they tried the least with it, though. I think it just did not come out the way that they intended it to. But it's not necessarily like I'm saying that we're ranking them the best quality to worst quality. It's just like our personal favorite. Mm.
But can we say the movie that probably achieved the goal that it had the least of the three was the best one?
But I think that Attack of the Clones achieved the goal that it had the least.
But what was the goal of the Attack of the Clones then?
I think the goal of Attack of the Clones was to introduce Padme and Anakin's romance and to kind of show Anakin's slow transition to the dark side when the first movie introduced him as a very sweet kid. But I think it completely failed at everything it set out to accomplish. And as the middle movie, it did not set out to accomplish introducing a brand new.
But that would just mean it didn't meet its goal then.
No, which is why like none of us liked it.
But when you're like ranking one and three together, like what you're saying is like inherently like Phantom Menace achieved what it was setting out to do more than Revenge of the Sith did. When I don't really get the sense that that's exactly what happened. Maybe they're both rough movies, but it seemed pretty apparent to me that Revenge of the Sith was the one that George Lucas like actually made an attempt to get right.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, but personally, I just did not think that Revenge of the Sith completely set out to what it needed to do, and I think that the goals of Sith versus Phantom Menace are just very different, and I just think that Phantom Menace accomplished what it needed to do more successfully. Although other people disagree with me, and that's okay. We're all just giving our opinion here. I'm not saying that, you know. I mean, two against one, so Revenge of the Sith obviously
has the majority vote.
It just doesn't sit with me well.
A lot of things do not sit with me well, but I survive.
That is the pinnacle of the prequel movies. Child-sized helmet and all.
Because there is no actual logic in it is why I love it. It's so bad, it's great.
And there you have it.
Thanks for listening to Trifecta.